understanding everything is changing rapidly and there's not going to be a one-size-fits-all solution, but that starts with that planning and partnership. If this is the future of warfare, we need to consider it right now, because there will come a time when we might not get a vote.
This is The Convergence, the Army's Mad Scientist podcast. I'm Matt Sanisbert, Deputy Director of Mad Scientist, and I'll be joined in just a moment by Rachel Melling of the Mad Scientist team. Mad Scientist is a U.S. Army initiative that continually explores the evolution of warfare, challenges assumptions, and collaborates with academia, industry, and government. You can follow us on social media at ArmyMadSci or subscribe to the blog The Mad Scientist Laboratory at madsciblog.tradoc.army.mil. Today, we're talking with Lieutenant Colonel Christine Hines, Logistics Officer in the Army Reserve and student at the Army War College. We'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Hines about her work on the Sullivan's Travels Project, what her research showed, and the implications of a sixth domain and fifth generation warfare. As always, the views expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the Department of Defense, Department of the Army, Army Futures Command, or the Training and Doctrine Command. Let's get started.
Lieutenant Colonel Hines, we're so excited to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me on today.
All right. So before we get started, can you introduce yourself to our audience, give them a little bit of a background about yourself and what you're doing at the Army War College?
Sure. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Christine Hines, Chris Hines. I'm a 90 Alpha Logistics Officer in the Army Reserve, currently at the Army War College. And over the last 6 months, I participated in the Future Seminar, where we were placed into teams to research a future-focused question posed to us by an appointed senior leader. So that's what we've been, our team of five has been working on over the last 6 months.
That's awesome. Welcome to the show. This is the second in our series looking at the projects you guys had at the Army War College. So why don't you go into that project a little bit? Tell us about how you came up with the topics that you wrote on for the future dynamics of warfare.
The whole project, it was a very iterative project from start to finish, all starting with the question, focusing on how innovations from contemporary conflicts impact future dynamics of warfare. So we analyzed conflicts, we divided them up in two areas that I looked at specifically was the Ukraine-Russia conflict and then cyber warfare overall. Even though this didn't quite pass the threshold of our definition for conflict, we weren't limited to these conflicts, but it was just a starting point for initial research. And as I looked at both of these, I just became more interested in the non-military or non-federally governed entities and their impact overall in crisis and conflict, and specifically the private sector as it related to Ukraine, and then juxtaposing that with private sector support to a conflict like Israel-Hamas. Also with the private sector within our own critical infrastructure, how adversaries can target and impact us through our water supply, power grid, healthcare, supply chains. And while none of these concepts are necessarily new, we looked at how they are taking a more prominent place on this conflict spectrum.
All right. So going off that, ma'am, one specific part of the report that you authored was called The Private Sector Involvement in Future Conflicts, where you discuss this idea of industry and these outside external factors as the sixth domain. Can you tell us about the research that you did for this piece, what the sixth domain is in this context, and then why it should be considered as a domain?
Yes, definitely. It started off with looking at the initial satellite imagery from companies like Maxar Technologies and Planet Labs that were able to disprove some of the Russian claims, expose some of their actions, and how this aided in the initial Ukrainian defense. And from there, I just looked at all the numerous companies that were providing critical support to Ukraine through cyber, communications, data migration. And some of this support was free, pro bono, goodwill support. And then I came across the Atlantic Council's report that specifically labeled this as a sixth domain and the private sector's role in warfare. They define it as the sphere of activities of the private sector in warfare. Although much of their report is geared towards cyber and critical infrastructure, homeland defense, it's built off of lessons from the Ukraine conflict. As far as whether this should be considered a sixth domain, I can't say I agree with this completely. I used it in the report because I like that it raised it to this level of attention. Because it is a critical consideration for warfare and warfare planning, not only for the assets and capabilities it can deliver, but because of the risks it also brings. I'm hesitant to name this as a domain, though, really to recommend any additional domains until we re-examine what constitutes a domain and the criteria for domains. But I think the private sector overall, along with our other six domain, the cognitive domain, it can be considered on the same level as our current ones when it comes to planning and preparations because of the impact that the private sector has had on this specific conflict and as we look at the future.
So I agree with you. I think it's, we need to be examining this, but I'm not sure it should be considered another domain, but it is having such an impact. And you can look at things like you mentioned Maxar, but we've also talked a lot about Starlink with Elon Musk's company assisting them. So the question I want to ask you about this is, what does the other side of that look like? Because you mentioned this was all just goodwill support, but there are no alliances with these companies. There's what kind of repercussions could happen if a company pulls its support or feeds a military false information or gives them false satellite imagery? There's no guarantees with this support from these private companies. So what does it look like if it's turned into a threat?
You're correct. There is absolutely no guarantee. Not directly answering your question, but I think we can't get focused on that as a reason to regulate necessarily, because then we lose the support overall. But we do have to consider that it's a factor. And I think that goes into understanding the why. Why is this company supporting this conflict? Why not this conflict? Is it because of their values, their agenda, their moral obligations? Is it financial? But I think having that analysis helps us look at the broader picture of what would cause them to turn off that support. So there is the risk of relying too much on any support that can be turned off that easily. But if we dig into those underlying causes for that support and we fully understand that, then we may be able to predict them and the catastrophic effects that may occur if they turn off that support. As we've seen in Ukraine, it can impact whether an event occurs or does not occur if certain capabilities are turned off. If we're fed false information, especially with some of the technologies we're seeing used in Israel and Hamas, we could target the wrong individuals. So there are several devastating consequences that could occur, and there's no surefire way to eliminate any of them. But just, I think, starting with the why and understanding why a company might support and planning early and often for that type of support will improve the outcome.
It sounds like it's something that needs to be kind of baked into the planning early on to figure out what can be relied on in specific times and to ensure that, you know, those lines of communication are open during a time of conflict to ensure that it's something that is reliable and that we can plan around, really. And it makes me think of something that you talked about in your report where you talked about the Elon Musk Starlink and his ability to impact operations almost by turning it on and off during certain times. So that's exactly what that makes me think of.
Yes, very much so. And again, we can't discount the great things it brings, but have to understand that if a company brings their values and their agenda with it, we need to be familiar with that and understand what's going to trigger that support to be turned off and not just assume they'll fall in line with our agenda.
Yeah, it's definitely an assumption that needs to be stated upfront during planning efforts. Pivoting from the sixth domain just a little bit, you also talked about fifth generation warfare. And I feel like this topic kind of fits in a little bit with the cyber attack aspect potentially, but with the introduction of the sixth domain, as well as this concept of fifth generation warfare and cyber attacks, how can we protect ourselves and our industry partners in a time of conflict?
Yeah, so the fifth generation warfare concept actually emerged from our report at the tail end. After we all brought our analysis together and we discussed our findings, we really brought this concept to life. Not a new concept, one that's not quite defined, but just the power that it holds. So none of us researched this individually, but it just came to fruition from all of the individual reports that were done. So with that and with Sixth Domain, understanding everything is changing rapidly and there's not going to be one size fits all solution. But as just discussed, it starts with that planning and partnership. Atlantic Council, in their report, they actually identified several recommendations that I really liked, a lot of them. I'll highlight a few, but one of them is that national framework for coordination and collaboration with the private sector during wartime. And I would expand that even prior to wartime. That should be occurring early and often. They mentioned establishing regional resilience collaboratives in geographical locations to plan for private sector activities in wartime, and having a surge capability of cybersecurity personnel through some type of civilian cybersecurity reserve corps. So all of these little initiatives, I think, all boil down to that dialogue, that early planning, coordination. We've kept the private sector away from war planning and crisis planning, but I think now we're realizing it's a necessity to bring them in, at least to the conversation. Similarly, with fifth generation warfare and the role of the citizen, it's whether we embrace this idea or reject it. Ukraine has shown numerous ways in which the government incorporated civilians into the fight through the IT army, pushing the Ukrainian message, or when Ukrainians were sharing photos of Russian captured soldiers through Telegram. If this is the future of warfare, we need to consider it right now, find the best ways to voluntarily incorporate citizens in some capacity legally, because there will come a time when we might not get a vote and people will involve themselves, and maybe not in ways we like it. So starting that discussion now on what does that look like for us in our future, LISCO.
Could you kind of give us a background on the fifth generation piece as well? So we did talk sixth domain, but can you kind of describe the fifth generation warfare that we've been talking about?
Yes. So the fifth generation warfare, there are probably dozens of definitions out there on what this means to different individuals. But we looked at it as the tactics like the social media influence, operation cyber attacks, but all these things that play a more prominent role in warfare, the incorporation of private sector, the incorporation of citizens, but how these non-kinetic factors are influencing warfare, and it being considered a fifth generation of warfare because these non-kinetic factors may take a larger seat at the table than the kinetic factors. So that's how we approached it from our team standpoint on fifth generation. We're looking at these non-kinetic factors as opposed to the kinetic and how prominent they were in the future.
I want to ask you about, I mean, the DoD is it's a large organization, lots of moving parts, bureaucratic, I think, to put it nicely. So what do you see as some of the roadblocks to making all this happen, institutional or technological? And what are some ways maybe that we can defeat those roadblocks?
I think bureaucracy and fear are two roadblocks that we have to overcome. The bureaucracy just slows everything down. And the fear of what this might look like and what we might reveal, or do we become too much of a military nation? Do we give off that perception to others that we are all military? I think that fear might take over some of this and at least cause a hurdle. I think there's other hurdles, common hurdles that would come up, like information sharing, clearances, communication platforms, but those are just hurdles, nothing that could prevent integration. But mostly from the leadership standpoint, it's just uncharted territory. There's no roadmap for this. At what level does integration occur? Who owns these conversations? Again, those are hurdles, not roadblocks. We have to be confident to have the conversation, accept that this is the future, and then just move forward and not try to reject it. On the private sector side, we might find that they don't want to be a part of the conversation, whether personal views or their own fear of their image of being too incorporated with the military or the government, not just the military. Comes down to the narrative. How do we convince companies, individuals, stakeholders to be a part of this conversation and letting them know that we value their opinion also? It's not a partnership if it's not collaboration. I think, as mentioned earlier, we can do our own analysis as to the why. Why did companies provide support to Ukraine and not other conflicts? What was their agenda? Was it financial? Was it goodwill? And what happens when a company has dual relationships with adversaries or other nations that might cause their own conflict? But us doing that initial analysis could help us determine who we need on our side and what it would take to get them there.
Hurdles that may impact the U.S. Army or U.S. DoD in working with industry partners or this sixth domain. I kind of want to ask you another question about how you see the differences between how it would work for us and how it would work with some of our adversaries. We have a different relationship with our private sector than some other countries might. And so do you see a difference between how the sixth domain would impact us or how we would interact with it as opposed to some of our adversaries?
I think there's a definite difference, mostly in our push for freedom. We are not mandating that a company supports us or supports our cause. There obviously are always going to be times during conflict or during war when the government can mandate certain support, but that is not what we're talking about here. So for this conversation, we're different in our values that we push with these companies and trying to garner that support. I think also in the way we use the internet and social media, a little bit more on the fifth gen side, that is a free platform for information sharing, not information control, which is something we'll see different in some of our adversaries that use these platforms for information control, where our information sharing makes us more susceptible to some of these risks that come along with fifth gen warfare. But keeping our values with that, we can't turn away from that.
Moving on to look towards the future. We're talking about looking at the Russia-Ukraine conflict like you guys did in your project. But if we were looking towards a future conflict and implementing what we're seeing now and using that to gauge what we're going to see in the future, in 10 years' time, what does this idea of the sixth domain look like, or how has it evolved?
I think our report's overall conclusion in one line really summarized how we saw the future of warfare, and it's that everyone is a player and everything is a target. And I think that's exactly what it looks like 10 years and on. Everyone will have some ability to shape and be shaped by warfare. The entry points for conflict increase as technology and accessibility increases, and nation states won't be the sole controller of warfare anymore. There'll be so many players, and the warfare market will be saturated with players, targets, and unrestricted, no rules warfare because of the lack of regulation. And I'm not advocating for that, but the lack of regulation on the support or lack of support by every entity. The future evolution, we may change how we view warfare overall. And it's not only kinetic, like we discussed with fifth generation. And while we've touched on that in doctrine with hybrid warfare, I think the evolution leans more towards this less kinetic approach. And when do all of these non-kinetic tactics become warfare? What's the threshold that crosses non-kinetic cyber attacks to something that's conflict worthy? I think also we'll see even more of a rise in the narrative. The narrative is important now. We know that. But in the next decade, I think that narrative is going to be even more critical. The access to information, disinformation, misinformation, conspiracy theories, all of this will continue to grow. And in a country that's very polarized, I think it makes everyone a bit more susceptible to all of this information. More parties will be able to spin the narrative, gain followers, again, going to everyone's a player, everything's a target. So to impact all this, we need to embrace the societal norms now. How do we capitalize on a generation of future civilian influencers? Does the military have space for an influencer type MOS that's different from MISO? I don't know. How do we integrate more with the private sector to understand their values, their agenda, and pave the way for that future integration if we recognize and embrace now that we're going to need that support?
Chris, I think this has been truly a great conversation. And I think the big piece that we want to pull out is this is something that is going to continue and it's only going to grow. And it is something that we have to recognize and acknowledge and incorporate into our planning in the future. So I think wrapping up today, I think this was a great conversation and we were very grateful for you to be a part of our podcast.
Okay. Thank you so much. It was a great time.
Thanks for listening to The Convergence. I'd like to thank our guest, Lieutenant Colonel Christine Hines. You can follow us on social media at @ArmyMadSci, and don't forget to subscribe to the blog, The Mad Scientist Laboratory, at madsciblog.tradoc.army.mil. Finally, if you enjoyed this podcast, please consider giving us a rating or review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you accessed it. This feedback helps us improve future episodes of The Convergence and allows us to reach a bigger and broader audience.